Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, May 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, bringing new technology to the Saratoga community by providing telehealth care for routine and urgent care. Telehealth medicine at Saratoga Hospital, saratogahospital.org, to learn more. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Ira Hansball of Albany Medical Center. She is here to answer your questions about Huntington's disease and movement disorders. It's usually a popular show, this Medical Monday, so call early is my advice. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ira Hansball and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today for Medical Monday is Dr. Ira Hansball of Albany Medical Center. Dr. Hansball is a neurologist specializing in Huntington's disease and other movement disorders. She completed her residency in neurology at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia and completed 2 years of fellowship training at Columbia University. Dr. Hansball is board certified in neurology and is an active member of the American Academy of Neurology, Movement Disorder Society, Parkinson's Study Group, and Huntington's Study Group. If you have a question for the doctor today, the number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. Dr. Ira Hansball, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing an hour with us. Before we get going on the nuts and bolts of this and also get to calls, why don't you give those of us who don't know a quick summary of what it is that is Huntington's disease and where we are with treatment?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, May is Huntington's Disease Awareness Month. Normally we have a lot of events planned to increase awareness in our area. Of course, all of that we're doing by other means during this time. But Huntington's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder, meaning once it starts, it progresses, and it causes the brain to lose neurons. And the symptoms that go along with that include abnormal movements, mostly in the form of something called chorea, cognitive changes, so memory troubles, and mood changes or personality changes. And that combination of symptoms is what defines Huntington's disease. At present, there's no cure for that disease, but there is a lot of research and excitement on the horizon, about upcoming studies. And so currently we treat Huntington's disease in the Capital District at the Albany Medical Center, HDSA Center of Excellence. We're able to provide, multidisciplinary approach to treat Huntington's disease. So we have a physical therapist, we have a psychologist, we have a social worker, a speech therapist, and a neurologist. And we treat the symptoms symptomatically.
All these diseases that are chronic and ultimately terminal are insidious and horrible. This one seems particularly so in that it strikes people in their prime. When is the prime time that someone would get this?
Yeah, there is a version of Huntington's disease that's juvenile onset, but most of the time people develop symptoms middle age, so 30s and 40s.
Oh, boy.
I had a tickle in my throat.
I hear you. We'll take a break shortly, and you can get a drink of water, okay?
I'm good.
Oh, good.
And so, 30s and 40s is around the time you start to think about careers and plan families. And so to get symptoms at that time is really... And at any age, it's devastating, but really affects families significantly.
There is the juvenile version, and then there is the adult version that comes in the 30s and 40s, typically. What is the actual difference in the disease itself that manifests itself sometimes in younger kids and then mostly in adults?
That's a really good question. It's age of onset's really determined by the genetics of the disease.
Oh, boy.
And so, there's just a frog in there.
I hear you. No, I got that all the time.
Sorry
it's okay.
About that.
No problem.
So the genetics of the disease are actually pretty unique. It's an autosomal dominant condition, meaning if a parent has the disease, their child has a 50-50 chance of inheriting it. But more than that, it's something called a trinucleotide repeat disease. So we all have a certain number of these trinucleotide repeats on chromosome 4 called CHE. If we have the normal amount, we're fine. But if we have one copy that has an expanded amount, that's when we develop HT. And if you have a very high number, that means that you'll develop symptoms younger in age, and that's responsible for the juvenile onset.
Our guest today is Dr. Ira Hanspahl. She is at Albany Medical Center, and she is involved with research and treatment of Huntington's disease. And let's tell you what, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get to the emails and the phone calls. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Medical Monday. We'll be right back. Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center, we're talking about Huntington's disease today. And I'll tell you what, let's go to an email we got in, an interesting one, I think.
Okay.
This is from Carol Ann. Actually, she sent two emails, but I'll put them both together. First thing is, if someone doesn't know of a family history of Huntington's disease, what symptoms lead to a diagnosis?
Okay, and that's part one of the question, right?
Yep. Yes, indeed.
So it's actually very, very, very uncommon to develop symptoms of the disease without a family history. It's possible, but it's really uncommon. the hallmark of the disease that used to be called Huntington's chorea is chorea. It's an abnormal movement. In that movement, it's a very uncoordinated, quick movement.
Yeah.
So it looks different than people with Parkinson's or different than people who have a tremor. Because the disease is a combination of movement problems, yeah, cognitive troubles, and personality changes, it is possible that people can develop the other symptoms first. And in that scenario, if somebody develops cognitive troubles in the absence of movement troubles.
Yeah.
In the absence of a family history, I don't know that one would think of Huntington's disease.
Okay.
So the family history is really important.
And the second question, maybe a thornier one, this is also from Carol Ann. What are the ethical responsibilities a person has to divulge this diagnosis to family members?
That's actually a really interesting question. So, you know, in the world of genetic testing,
yeah,
which, you know, we're in now, it comes, the ethics of when you should test and who should know is discussed a lot. And so I think, unlike an infectious disease, for example, so we feel there's an ethical obligation to disclose someone's AIDS results if it affects a partner, for example.
Right.
Although there's protections for that. So with HD, there isn't really that, but we very fiercely believe that it's each person's right to divulge their diagnosis or not. But it does impact families.
Yes.
It impacts how you plan a family. It impacts children. So each family handles it differently, but it's a really tough and great question.
A number of years ago, and we'll get to the phones in a moment, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. We will get to the phones momentarily, but as I recall, and my memory is a little sketchy on it, a few years ago, there was a drug or a trial anyway that looked like, okay, we might have a cure here. What happened with that?
Yeah, truthfully, the thing that's way more exciting is the studies that are going on right now.
So this didn't pan out then?
No, this didn't pan out. So right now, so a little bit about the history of Huntington's disease. Huntington's disease is the first disease for which we discovered the genetic abnormality,
right,
which is kind of amazing that we figured out the abnormal gene. The story itself is really amazing. And we thought, 1994, not that long ago, that if we figured out the abnormal gene, we'd figure out the treatment incredibly quickly. And so on the one hand, 30 years later, it's not so long of a time in the world of research, but it feels like a really long time since we discovered the gene.
Yeah.
We are embarking on some clinical trials that are really, really exciting that show that maybe they have a chance to either modify how the disease progresses or if we can treat early enough, because I can know when somebody has the disease before they develop symptoms with that genetic test, that we might be able to actually alter the outcome of this disease.
Well, what about the cure is currently out of reach at the moment, but what about therapy and prolonging the useful life of a person who has this disease? I assume there has been some progress there. That's what you do, right?
That is what I do. So we are really good at treating symptoms of things. So I have medicines that can treat abnormal movements. We have therapies and multidisciplinary therapies to help with trouble swallowing or mood changes. But in terms of a therapy that actually alters the disease and how the disease manifests its symptoms, that we don't have yet. But in the clinic, we're able to really provide a multidisciplinary approach, kind of all in one go as well, as opposed to having someone come in and then we refer them out to a speech therapist. It can be hard to get out of the house when you have a degenerative disorder. So we're able to combine all of that in one place.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Let's jump on the phones at 800-348-2551. Elizabeth in Hyde Park. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I adopted my 8-year-old grandchild. I adopted him when he was 13 months old. Unfortunately, his maternal grandmother and an aunt have Huntington's chorea. When I first got the baby, I had gone to have him all checked out, and I questioned this, and they basically told me that they will not do genetic testing on a child unless they present symptoms or they're 18 years old when they can sign their own consent. Considering I'm much older and trying to plan for this child, they basically told me that if you want genetic testing, you have to go out of the country, go to Mexico or Canada and pay out of pocket, because they will not do genetic testing on a child until they're 18 years old. And I'm wondering, why did they make these type of rules? And secondary, any of these genetic home testing, would they pick up something like this?
You know, I actually am not certain if the home genetic testing does pick up on that. I haven't looked into that at all. But as a rule, because this is a disorder that's adult onset in nature, sort of everybody kind of is on the same page about not testing children because it doesn't change the outcome of their childhood. It doesn't change the outcome of young adulthood either, but it does change maybe how someone would plan a family or plan their finances for the future. So
exactly.
In the United States, we do test children if they're symptomatic or if there's some other reason that I can't think of, but we do it with an ethics consult, really make sure that we've thought about all the pros and cons of doing the testing. What benefit are we gaining from it other than sort of just knowing? Because sometimes just knowing can also be a burden as well. But so it is possible under, you know, a lot of discussion and ethics consults.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today, Huntington's Today, with Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim.
Tardive dyskinesia, what other conditions may mimic Huntington's?
Dyskinesia is a really good one. So Huntington's disease, really, it's defined by its chorea, but can present with any movement disorder. So sometimes my patients have a tremor, sometimes they're stiff, sometimes they're ataxic, which means unsteady. And so other neurodegenerative diseases can present similarly, like there are features of Parkinson's disease that might overlap, or features of other drug-induced movement disorders that might overlap. But it's the combination of those three features of cognitive troubles with mood or personality changes and the movements that together really complete the picture of Huntington's disease.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Hanspahl, do you think that with the current state of the art in manipulating genetics and chromosomes, that perhaps within your lifetime a cure is in sight?
I really do think so. The exciting research that I was talking about is with therapy called antisense oligonucleotides. And so these are molecules that target the abnormal DNA and stop its production, because what makes people develop symptoms is an accumulation of bad protein product. And so if we can stop that accumulation, we can stop disease. And I think we're so close that these studies right now that we're that are going on are to just discover whether it's tolerable, and it is. And so now we're in this phase of figuring out, will it make a difference? And I think we're all really excited that this is the closest we've ever come. It will be in my lifetime.
What's the difference between a bad protein and a good protein?
That's a really great question. That took a long time to figure out what the good protein does. I'm not sure exactly what the good protein does. It's called Huntington, named after the disease. Mm-hmm. It's present in all our cells. It seems to be really important for development, sort of even as an embryo, as a fetus, sort of it's really important for that kind of development. All we know is that when the protein's bad, the abnormal shape of it causes it to collect. And when it collects, it sort of gums up the system of how a cell works. And so it's not so much that the bad protein's making bad things, it's just getting in the way of normal function.
It's Huntington's Today on Medical Monday. Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to join in. At the outset of the program, we discussed very briefly the differences between juvenile onset Huntington's and Huntington's disease. And as I understand it, it's more or less the same illness, but there is a greater preponderance of proteins in the juvenile version of this. Does the juvenile version of Huntington's manifest itself differently?
Yeah, it presents really differently, actually. So whereas people, the average age of onset being 30s and 40s, people may develop a lot of those extra movements in children or in the juvenile form. Those movements tend to be less prominent. People tend to be much more stiffer and slower, almost look Parkinsonian. If someone's really quite young, they can actually get a regression of milestones, meaning sort of academically you don't do well in school anymore. You might be clumsier in sports. Those are probably the hallmarks that the typical movement looks different in the juvenile form.
Our guest today is Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. The number is 800-348-2551. Jim in Saratoga. Jim, you're up.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I had seen a video online about the use and supposedly clinical studies, backed by clinical studies, of lion's mane mushrooms as a neuron regenerator. And I was wondering if you knew anything about that and if that had any application to this, since you talked about damage to nervous system.
All right, this might be off topic, doctor, and if it is, feel free to say so.
It's on the topic of movement disorders. It's less on the topic of Huntington's disease, but whatever the lion's mane video is, it must be going around on the internet. I have a lot of patients that inquire about it and that actually are taking it as well. I'm not quite sure what the premise behind the lion's mane is. I have not watched the video, but I think the idea is just that it reduces the inflammatory burden. That's my understanding. I don't know about the clinical trials for it, but I do know that it's not harmless. And my Parkinson's patients that take it feel that it gives them an added advantage in terms of how they're managing their symptoms. Mm. I haven't heard of anyone using it in my HD population.
Oh, well, Jim, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. This email came in from Pat. And two questions for you, Dr. Hanspahl. What is the National Huntington's Disease Parity Act? That's one.
Yes. Give me the second question as well.
All right. You ready? This is like a game show now.
I know. Thanks.
I understand there is an Albany chapter of the Huntington's Disease Society of America that covers much of upstate New York. What are some of their advocacy efforts? How can folks become involved?
Yeah, so we do have, there's a national organization, the Huntington's Disease Society of America. Through that organization is where we have information, education for families, support for families, for physicians, for providers. Our convention was to have been in June in New Orleans this year, so it's going to be happening virtually now.
Yeah.
which is actually, I think, amazing. A lot of people will be able to attend that maybe couldn't have traveled that now will be able to attend. Mm-hmm. But we have a local chapter as well. It's the Albany chapter, and really serve the Capital District and areas north and west as well, where we provide support for family members and for the community, but also in terms of advocacy, in terms of fundraising for awareness, for research. And so we have a website that can be found through the hdsa.org.
Okay. And then the first one was about, apparently, is this a national act, the National Huntington's Disease Parity Act, or is this in New York State?
Pat's going to get mad at me. It is in New York State, and the details she knows way better than I do.
Okay. So Pat's a ringer. You know Pat, then.
I do know Pat. Ah. And Pat and other members of our chapter have actually spent hours upon hours of advocacy to bring awareness to legislation as well as to the community about HD, and in particular about how aspects of healthcare for HD patients in terms of applying for disability, applying for Medicare. There's often a delay when that happens, and that delay is not really something that people with HD can sort of afford to wait for.
What is the rationale for a delay?
Oh, there's a delay in a lot of things.
Oh, well, you make a point. Yeah, so that's a very good point. So
no, yeah, I think applications, people who have applied for disability, for example, it might take a year to get approved. But in a year, somebody with HD can look dramatically different than the way they were before. Mm-hmm. They may not, but they may. And so things like that become meaningful.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's jump back to the phones now with Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Marta in Poughkeepsie. Marta.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
A suggestion and a question. You might be able to clear that frog in your throat by gently tapping your thymus. That works for me. Just don't try to clear it with your throat. Just thump your thymus gently, Doctor.
Some medical advice for the doctor. Good for you. That's nice. Thank you.
It just started. I'll do anything.
Just try it. Gently thumping your thymus. Anyway, the question is related to RFR, or radio frequency radiation, which is on the rise with 5G being rolled out. And we got the 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. What I understand about these microwaves that are, you know, bombarding us constantly 24/7 is that they're cutting through the DNA in every cell. And I've read material and heard people who seem to know a lot say it's definitely causing movement disorders as well as a lot of other serious physical problems. Can you comment? Have you run across this in your research? Is studying going on? Because I really feel like, you know, we're being slowly destroyed, and I don't understand why $85 billion is going to be spent to make it hit everybody in the whole country.
I actually don't know of the research that's being done about that. So that's a really great question. It's something that I would have to read into to get back to you with.
Okay.
It sounds like you've done a lot of reading about it.
I think
yes,
Marta has.
You.
Yes, Marta, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center, and we talk about Huntington's and other movement disorders. You are currently working on a brain donation repository. What's that all about and why?
I am. I have worked on it more in the past than I have recently, but it's always good to revisit, which is this. Most of our diseases that we treat, we learn most when we can study the brain tissue. And in order to do that, we have to have brains sort of post-mortem after people are done using them so that we can study the differences and the changes that occur on a microscopic level. The HDSA actually has started a program called HD Legacy, which is the same exact thing. It's a brain repository, but for people only with Huntington's disease, because there's an answer microscopically for why some people develop much more prominent mood troubles as opposed to somebody else who develops much more prominent movement troubles. And so the only way we will learn that information is to be able to study tissue.
Then would you suggest that there is a component, a level, a threshold of this mutant protein that is higher in people who might have more movement troubles and less so than, let's say, those who have mood issues?
It's interesting. No, I don't think that the number of repeats and therefore the amount of protein determines the symptom distribution. There must be something else that determines it, and so we don't know what that is yet.
Well, we are joined today by Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center, and this is, in fact, Medical Monday. Let's go back to the phones. Jermaine in Springfield. Jermaine, you're on.
Hi. I've got a couple questions. My aunt died at age 13 in 1918. The family used to call it St. Vitus dance disease, but I'm under the impression that that's actually Huntington's chorea. And I'm 70 years old, and I'm wondering if I have to be looking out for, like, is my movement going to change in life? Am I going to be less able to move around, or will it affect me, I guess? Or should I be tested for it?
This was your aunt, you said?
Yeah, it was my mother's sister, but she never made it past age 13.
And did your mother ever have symptoms?
No, my mother lived to 93 years old.
Then you are unlikely to have the disease, because you can only inherit it from your parent, and if your mother did not have it, then you probably don't either.
Oh, good. You know, but this usually manifests in the 30s and 40s. Would it be typical for someone to suddenly get it in their 70s?
It is possible to get it later in life. So we talked about having an excess number of repeats that makes someone symptomatic. There's a range of repeats at which patients might develop mild symptoms or have no symptoms at all, but then still have the ability to pass it to the next generation. And it's called a reduced penetrance range. If somebody's in that reduced penetrance range, they may develop symptoms later in life, like in their 70s or 80s.
We are joined today by Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Let's quickly go over to line one and Jim in Queensbury. Jim, you're up.
Yes, hi. Thank you. A question. I have a friend who is manifesting chorea and depression. He's never been tested, but his mom and her brother or his maternal aunt have been tested positive for Huntington's. And I'm just wondering, this intrathecal injection of the missense oligonucleotide, are there ongoing clinical studies in this country? Like phase three studies for this?
We haven't started phase three studies as yet, but they're soon to be. We've initiated and completed a phase two trial. There's a limited number of sites in the United States that are enrolling or have enrolled. As you can imagine, they filled up pretty quickly. And so the closest sites to Albany that are doing these studies, one is in New York City at Columbia, and the other is in Boston.
Which we're in Boston? You know, what hospital?
I think at Mass General, actually.
Mass General.
Yeah, okay. But as I said, I don't know the status of the trial in all the various cities, but do know that because this is what we're excited about, and this is obviously families are excited about, so the enrollment has filled up quickly.
All right. It sounded very hopeful.
Well, Jim,
it is hopeful.
Jim,
I agree.
Thank you very much. We'll take a quick break here. Joined today by Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Yeah, it's Huntington's today and other movement disorders on this Medical Monday. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center is with us today. And let's go back quickly before we go to our next call about treatment. And what is the sort of standard treatment? A person comes to you in their 30s and they're showing signs. You do the test. You realize this person has Huntington's disease. How do you stave off the really, really, really terrible symptoms?
So we don't have any medication that delays or slows the progression of the disease at this time. And so if I have somebody who is seeking treatment. It's really a matter of which symptoms are most bothersome. And so there's no one standard treatment or medication that I use on every patient. It's individualized to each person to help make symptoms as manageable as they can be for as long as they can be. Our goal is to keep people working as long as they can, keep people at home as long as they can. And so it's a combination and multidisciplinary approach.
This email came in from Mark. And this is an interesting question. Mark writes, there seems to be a lot of information about Parkinson's disease available to the general public, but what about Huntington's disease? How can the average person tell the difference between the two?
I'm not sure that the average person may easily be able to tell the difference between the two if you're just sort of watching people walk down the street, I guess. but Parkinson's disease looks very different, I guess, if we really want to study it, in that patients with Parkinson's tend to have a stooped and shuffling gait, and they tend to have an asymmetric tremor. They tend to talk quietly. They tend to not have any extra abnormal movements that interfere with speech or with hand gestures or with balance. And so I guess in the big picture, grossly, that might be the difference between the two. But Huntington's disease is a relatively rare disease by comparison. And so while we have many people as part of our HD community in Albany, the Parkinson's community is much, much bigger. And so if you want more information or videos, the HDSA website's a good source.
And we'll get back to the phones in a second. Is there any similarity at a granular level between Huntington's and Alzheimer's?
The similarity between the two is that they are both neurodegenerative diseases. The mechanism that triggers the degeneration are entirely different. And they involve different parts of the brain sort of initially, but the manifestation of symptoms can appear similar sort of initially, I guess, might be the better way to say it.
Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center is here, and back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Susan in Albany. Susan, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I think the doctor's already answered my question, but my father developed HD very late. I believe he was at least in his mid-50s, and he died of it about 10 years ago. And I was just wondering how late a person could develop it. I believe you've answered that. My sister is positive. My brother's negative. I started to be tested in Boston and then had personal things I had to deal with, so I never went back. I'm now 66, and I have no symptoms, but I'm thinking I should probably go and get tested anyway.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No, that's okay. You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that your father getting symptoms later in life, while it doesn't necessarily predict that you too could be at risk and develop symptoms later in life if you have it, it does make one wonder that I think when we live to be older than the age our parent was when they develop symptoms, that maybe we've sort of passed the zone. I think that given it, the other thing is your repeat length when it comes from your father.
Right.
Is a little bit more unstable than when it comes from your mother, meaning it has the chance to grow in size. And so there is a chance that if you get it from your dad, you could get more repeats, which may mean that you'd be younger in onset when you get it. So I think overall, while he was older, it doesn't really help predict your likelihood because it's still a 50-50 chance. And so if that is something that you still want to pursue, that option is definitely there.
Okay. Well, we don't, you know, they weren't able to see any other person in the family through the generations who had ever had it. So, of course, we wondered if possibly he had gotten it from his father. I know about the instability on the male end of it. And that, but his older brother, interestingly, he died of Parkinson's. But as for Huntington's, my dad, from what we can see, is the only person in the family up until, of course, my sister is positive. Yeah. My sister, she would be about 67, 68 now. She lives in Chicago, and She's been very careful with diet. I think she takes coenzyme Q10 or whatever it is. I don't know what else is available, but she has some symptoms, but I think she's still coping.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I think ultimately a good diet, healthy lifestyle, you know, good habits, they're good for any condition all the time. So I'm glad to hear that she's able to keep active.
Susan, thanks so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday, Huntington's today with Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. Now, you know, I was called a defeatist on this program on Friday by my guest, and I guess this is my defeatist side coming out again. But if it is in your family, and we are told by medical science as it stands now that there's really no way to slow this thing down, what is the point of early testing?
The point of early testing is multiple. I think that if you know that it's in your family, sometimes the burden of knowing or not knowing can be tough. And so the question mark, getting tested would clear that question mark. The other things to consider are that it's really possible to plan a really full life knowing that you're positive. So what I mean by that is you can financially plan to make sure you have everything in place for when you might need extra care at home. But the thing that's also exciting because of medical advancements is family is really important to most of us, and you can still plan to have a family. I think the biggest burden when you're at a or one of the biggest burdens when you're from a family that has HD and you know that yourself, you are at risk, you don't want to put another generation at risk. But with IVF, we can absolutely make sure that if that's a route that people want to take, that we can have generations without HD. So you can plan for a family. You can choose to adopt if you don't want to. IVF is not something that sounds appealing to you. And we can really plan for a future. And the other part of knowing and getting tested early is research. As I said, these are exciting times for research. And ultimately, I think the ones that will benefit most, not just everybody, will be the people that have yet to develop symptoms, but we know that they're positive. That's where all the hope lies.
Our guest today is Dr. Ira Hanspahl of Albany Medical Center. It's Huntington's and Movement Disorders today on Medical Monday. The number's 800-348-2551. Lillian in Kingston. Lillian, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Thank you very much for taking the call. Doctor, I'm wondering if you have experience with episodic ataxia.
I do have a little bit of experience with episodic ataxia. It, too, is a really uncommon disorder.
Yeah. In 2015, I felt shoved from the second step in my house, went across the hallway, went into the wall, broke my neck and my back. Then there was a repeat in 2018. I broke my right wing and 10 and 11 ribs. And now I'm recovering from a push. I have to say push because that's exactly what it's like. A push, 4 o'clock in the morning on January 20th, I went flying down and my right arm, my right shoulder broke and my hip. And in 2018, I was put on acetazolamide. But yet, you know, I had this appearance of the problem in this January. And I'm just wondering if you've heard of anything different from acetazolamide.
No, and acetazolamide is one of the typical therapies that people will try for episodic ataxia. So it, too, is an inherited disorder often. It's really actually more uncommon, I think, than Huntington's disease. And the treatments, we don't have a standard treatment for episodic ataxia, but we do know that it's caused by disruption of sodium channels sometimes, right? So medications like acetazolamide, sort of based on their pharmacology of how they work, can help.
Mm-hmm.
But it is tough, especially the episodic nature of it, right? It's unpredictable.
Well, Lillian, thank you so much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Hans, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I feel bad about not being able to eloquently answer Pat's question. So I just wanted to read one line from the Parity Act that I found online.
Okay.
Because I think it summarizes what I should have said better, which is it's legislation that's designed to allow Americans suffering from Huntington's disease to obtain care as quickly as possible, because currently there's a 2-year delay when applying for Medicare. And so this is to limit that 2-year delay.
I don't understand, though, why there would be, why this specifically would call for a 2-year delay and what the rationale for that is.
Why? I don't know why there's a 2-year delay, but I think that delay is standard. And so the idea is to get rid of that delay.
I would assume that there'll be plenty of illnesses that should have a little quicker motion on that. This email came in from Cass, and Cass says, I have a 13-year-old granddaughter who has been diagnosed with functional neurological disorder. She overnight became unable to use her legs about 3 months ago and was diagnosed at Boston Children's Hospital. She lives in Northampton. I'm trying to find specialized physical therapy in the area, which is familiar with treatments for her. What is functional neurological disorder?
So a functional disorder is the term that we give when someone has symptoms that are not due to an identifiable neurologic cause. So there's no lesion in the brain or the spinal cord or the nerves that are causing symptoms, but instead it's a psychosomatic diagnosis that is an incredibly real, involuntary phenomenon for the person going through it. And so therapy requires a multimodal approach as well, with medications, psychotherapy, and physical therapy, all to sort of retrain and reorganize or sort of reset the brain. But it usually functional disorders can happen in the setting of a traumatic event. Sometimes it's identifiable, sometimes not.
And so doctors are sure then, in fact, that this is psychosomatic and not some sort of idiopathic manifestation of a different illness.
Correct.
Wow, that's amazing. And the second part of that question was, are there any specialized physical therapies or maybe multimodal therapies in this area that this person might be able to contact?
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of most physical therapists should be able to. I know at Albany Med, our physical therapists, particularly the ones that do our neuro rehab, are really quite wonderful. And then our psychiatry department as well has experience and is really quite wonderful.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of minutes here, and I'm sure there are some points about Huntington's that you would like made that I didn't ask about. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to just also make people aware of is in New York State, we actually have 3 nursing homes that have dedicated Huntington's disease floors, which is really kind of amazing because that's not necessarily the norm.
Yeah.
Patients with advanced disease, any advanced disease, sometimes can be difficult to take care of just because there's a lot to take care of. In Huntington's disease in particular, sometimes people feel overwhelmed because of cognitive changes with movement troubles sort of can make something as simple as eating be quite difficult. But we have 3 institutions in New York State that have dedicated HD floors that are able to not just work with HD patients, but work with them in unconventional ways that maybe other facilities might have trouble doing. And so they are... there's one facility in Rhinebeck by the name of Ferncliff. It's under ArchCare. Mm-hmm. ArchCare also has a facility in New York City, at Cardinal Cook Nursing Home, and then Citrin Nursing Home in Utica. And it's really kind of amazing because 10 years ago, our patients, if they needed care in a nursing home and we wanted to find one that was dedicated with HD knowledge and experience, we were going out of state, which is hard to do, right, with insurance and with Medicare. And so it's really wonderful that we have these 3 places and relatively close to us. So being in Albany puts us at an advantage as well.
What is the average age of a Huntington's patient?
Well, like we said, the average age of onset can vary, but 30s, 40s, 50s would be maybe the average age of onset. And then people live for 10, 15, 20 years. And so most of my patients are sort of within that range. I have a few that are over 60 and a few that are over 70 and then less as the years go on.
And has the average life expectancy increased since you have been studying this and working with treating the symptoms at least?
I think for most degenerative diseases, we are better at treating symptoms in general. I think it's true in my Parkinson's population. I think it's true in Huntington's as well. We're better at sort of recognizing some of the more subtle symptoms that might have a more meaningful impact on the quality of life. And I think by addressing those things and being aware of it, we're able to not just prolong life, but improve the quality of life. So I think to some degree that's true.
What study would you like to see, and what breakthrough do you think we need to make the next step?
So I think we need a study, or we need a thing that stops the accumulation of the abnormal protein. And so if we could silence a gene, so we've talked about antisense oligonucleotides that can reduce protein burden. But if we could just stop the bad gene from making anything, right, if we could just silence it, I think that's the path that has the most promise in my eyes.
When will that happen?
We are in phases of trials now, so I hope that within the next 5 years, I have a better, sort of more specific answer of what it can do.
Are you involved with any trials?
At Albany Med, we currently have one clinical trial, which is Enroll-HD. It's actually an observational trial, so it doesn't involve taking medicines or being randomized to anything. But it's trials like Enroll in which we gather observational data. So every year we do an exam on a patient. We ask a lot of questions about mood. We do a blood test. We do cognitive testing. We gather that every year for their lifetime. And so it is part of a giant national and international repository of information. And based on that information and labs that have been discovered and trends that have been investigated is where we have had the basis for the current clinical trials that have such promise.
Well,
so currently Albany Med's involved in Enroll.
Dr. Hanspal, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Support comes from Nathan Letower Hospital, Gloversville, working to support the community during the COVID-19 pandemic with telemedicine, ICU, emergency care, and new respiratory illness center, NLH.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ira Hanspal for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered today by James Farrison. First time for you, Darren James? Good. Not bad. Well done. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on this program at 2 p.m., bring your coronavirus questions for Dr. Amesh Adalja. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.